The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
Well, good evening and hello again, everybody. Welcome to hour number one of Sports Talk 1240. WGBB Freeport, Long Island, New York is where you are. I'm Bill Donahue. I'll be taking you through the first hour on this Sunday night, the 7th day of January, 2018. Our engineer, Brian Graves, is across the way. Got a great show lined up for you tonight. Up first, we'll welcome in former New York Yankees bullpen ace from what's known as the Horace Clark era, Lindy McDaniel. And in the second half, we'll talk to the former New York Knicks point guard and Heisman Trophy winner Charlie Ward. He's got a new book out called The Athlete, Greatness, Grace, and the Unprecedented Life of Charlie Ward. So sit back, relax, warm up a little bit, enjoy Sports Talk 1240 on GBB. We've got some great stuff ahead in the next few hours. As always, before we begin, I invite you to follow us on our Facebook page titled Sports Talk 1240. There you'll find sports information, information on shows, and more. So stop by, give us a look. Then you can give us a like. You can also follow us on Twitter at SportsTalk1240. And all past shows can be heard on our website at www.SportsTalk1240.com. Well, my first guest was a right-handed relief pitcher in Major League Baseball, 21-year career from 1955 to 1975. During Lindy McDaniel's career, he witnessed approximately 3,500 major league games, and that's not including spring training. He had more than 300 teammates and played under 8 different managers. He attended the University of Oklahoma and Abilene Christian College, then played with the St. Louis Cardinals, the Cubs, the Giants, and the Yankees and the Kansas City Royals in the American League. He was a 2-time All-Star, and I'd like to welcome with us tonight, Sports Talk 1240, Lindy McDaniel. Lindy, good evening.
Good evening to you, Donahue. Yeah.
It's great to be with you, Lindy, on this chilly, bone-chilling cold night here on Long Island.
I bet it is.
Not too good, but Lindy, you were born in Oklahoma. Growing up, who were some of your favorite teams and ball players?
Well, we were actually able to get KMOX on the radio, St. Louis.
Okay.
And, of course, the Cardinals was my best team, and Stan Musial, and so I grew up wanting to be a Cardinal.
And you were able to obtain that dream, that's for sure.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
How about any other sports, Lindy? Did you follow any other sports when you were young?
Well, in college, I went to OU in basketball because they didn't have any baseball scholarships, but they had basketball, and I had a full scholarship there at OU. I want to tell you this story. That
sure.
I tell people that I was in the top 5 of my graduating class, and we only had 5 in my graduating class, actually.
Oh, but, yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah.
you made it.
Yes. And two of us went to major universities in full scholarships. So that's 40% of our class went to major universities under scholarship.
Outstanding, Lindy. Yeah, definitely. Now, 1960, you're with the St. Louis Cardinals. You're playing with guys like Stan Musial, Bob Gibson, Curt Flood, Ken Boyer. Talk to me a little bit about those guys that you played with on those Cardinal ball clubs.
Yes, I played with Curt Gibson, toward the end of my career with the Cardinals.
Right.
And, but 1960 was probably my best year in baseball. It's strange because I came up as a sidearm or almost sidearm, three-quarter overhand, maybe a little bit lower, and had a real good sinking fastball. But after 1957, I lost my sinking fastball at the big league level, and I was in serious trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And so 1958, I didn't do very good at all. And so in 1959, Howie Paulette, the pitching coach, they were using me as a spot starter, and I was like one win, four losses that year. And he said, well, why don't you just go into the ball game and just throw straight overhand? Because I would throw straight overhand to certain left-handed hitters, and I had a lot of speed and everything. And so I decided to do that. I asked to go in the bullpen and be a reliever. And that same day, this is when Howie Paulette said, why don't you just stay straight overhand? And so I did, and in 59, from that day, that was in May, I led the league in pitching and had wins and saves in relief, and just throwing straight overhand. So that was a big transition for me. But then in 1960, I came up with a fart ball. They call it the three-fingered fastball today, I suppose. And and that added a dimension to my pitching, yeah.
Sure, and then 60, you made the National League All-Star team.
Yes.
Must have been a great thrill. Now, you mentioned in the opening about Musial being one of your boyhood idols. Now, you played with him on the Cardinal Ball Club, so that must have been a real thrill, Lindy.
Yeah, I played with him 7 years, and it was a great, you know, he was a great ball player. He was a quiet leader, but he led with his personality and his bat, and it was just a good experience for me to be able to play with him.
Sure. Now, with the Cubs, you played with Banks, Santo, Billy Williams, more Hall of Famers. You're really lucky that you had teammates of such great stature.
Yes. Well, I did play with some of the best teams in baseball, the Cardinals, the Yankees, of course, and I played for the Giants, and I played for the Cubs and in Kansas City. So I had the opportunity to play with 15 different Hall of Famers, and so that was real nice.
Sure, yeah, a lot of guys don't have that opportunity. That's wonderful. We're speaking with Lindy McDaniel tonight on Sports Talk 1240. Now, during your career, over a four-game span at one time, you retired 32 straight hitters. That was in August of 1968, and in one of those games, you pitched seven perfect innings against the Detroit Tigers.
Yes.
Yeah, now...
Yeah, that particular time, we had what was equivalent to five doubleheaders in 5 days.
Wow.
So, actually, the Friday night game where you're talking about there, against Detroit, it was a doubleheader, but the second game went 18 innings.
Wow.
And was finally tied, so it was called because of curfew. And so we played a single game on Saturday against Detroit. We played a doubleheader Sunday. We played a doubleheader Monday and a doubleheader Tuesday. So I remembered that really well because that's a lot of games in 5 days.
Now, you also, Lindy, pitched in 225 consecutive games in the National League without committing an error. Now, that's fielding your position pretty well.
Yeah, well, one thing I always tried to do, if they're trying to bunt off of me and bunt the runner to second base, to always get that throw off to second base because that's really important to protect the runner. And but I could always feel good off the mound, and I made accurate throws. I think that was the main thing with me, you know.
Sure.
I wasn't a fielder like Bobby Shantz was a great fielder. And Bob Gibson, he was a great fielder. But I don't put myself in the same category, but I had a very accurate arm.
You did well. Yeah, you certainly did. Now, you earned Fireman of the Year honors. You finished third for the Cy Young Award and fifth in MVP voting. That was a tremendous year for you, Lindy.
Yes. Right, with the Cardinals.
Yeah,
right.
Outstanding. Now, Again, we got Lindy McDaniel with us tonight, the great Lindy McDaniel of Days Yore. In Chicago, you were the closer, but then they brought Ted Abernathy in, the Submariner, didn't they?
Right. And yeah. My first year with the Cardinals, I was coming off of two bad years with the Cardinals because, as I mentioned, I started throwing straight overhand.
Right.
And I forgot in 1961 and 62 how I did it. It was such a change of delivery. Actually, I went from a long stride to a short stride, and I went straight home, straight overhand. And I did it in a particular way. But they had no pictures of me, no film of me in 1960, which they should have had.
Mm-hmm.
And in 61, 62, I ran into a lot of rhythm problems, and I couldn't figure out what was wrong. And so when I traded with the Cubs, all at once it came to place in place again, pretty well. Not like it was in 60, but I led the league again in 1963 with the Cubs. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you certainly did. Now, you moved along to the San Francisco Giants, as we reported earlier. You had a chance to play for Herman Franks, who gets a lot of accolades from his former ball players for being a great skipper.
Well,
what do you think?
Well, he tied in my career. That's all I'm going to say.
Wow. Okay. Give us a little insight into that, Lindy. Yeah, what happened?
I'm not going to go into detail there.
Okay.
Because maybe I'll write a book, and maybe it'll be in the book, and maybe it won't be. But I was in the doghouse big time, and that's how the Yankees got me, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And how was it playing with Mays, McCovey, Marichal, Gaylord Perry, more Hall of Famers?
Well, they had a great team with a lot of talent. My problem with the Giants was they didn't play together as a team, and they didn't do the little things to win, like was true of the Cardinals or true of the Dodgers, where they would, you know, bunt, hit and run, and score those one or two runs, you know, that were really needed to win ball games. So they would blow the opposition away, but they could have been, in my opinion, a lot better if they had played together as a team a lot better.
They didn't do, as you said, the small things to help them win ball games.
Right.
Definitely. Okay. Now, as we said, you exit San Francisco, makes it clear for your pathway to the New York Yankees, where you had a lot of success with the Yankees. And you played for another illustrious manager there, the Major Ralph Houk.
Right. Well, I remember joining the Yankees because I was willing to be traded in the worst way.
Mm-hmm.
And it finally happened July the 12th. 1968, and you know what my ERA was with the Giants? It's 7.75, I think it was.
Okay.
Yeah, and so, and when I talk to young people, a lot of times I talk about my first outing in 1968 where I didn't get anybody out, and I threw five pitches and gave up four runs. And so I do that deliberately just to tell young people that this is going to happen to you at times. You know, everything is not going to be great. And no. And then I had to explain what I did from there. But anyway, it doesn't always go great. And so I don't join the Yankees. And they were in Chicago. The Yankees were playing the White Sox. And so as soon as I got to the ballpark, Ralph Houk called me in the little office there in Chicago. And so he said that he really thought I could do a good job for the Yankees and that he's going to give me a real good opportunity and not like if I didn't do good the first two or three times, that was it. He said, I'm going to give you a full opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I just told him, I said, well, that's music to my ears. And that's all I could ask for. But anyway, they brought me into a ball game against Baltimore. Of course, Baltimore was our big team at that time we were opposed against. So I'll tell you how the first outing went. I faced Rutch Robinson, the first hitter, and he hit the pitch for a double right down third baseline. And then Boog Powell was the next hitter, and so I threw a fart ball to him, and it didn't work like it's supposed to. He hit over the center field wall.
Whoa.
So here I am. I face two hitters, and I've given up two runs. I'm in the American League, and I remember thinking, I said, wow. I said, it's got to get better from here. So I remember really reaching back with everything I had, and actually I did strike out five of the next six hitters. So I did do something, you know, that day.
Right.
And then we come to New York, and Tony Oliva, we was playing the Minnesota Twins, and so he came in, and they brought me in relief. And I got him out on a grounder to first base and got my first save. And then it would just click, click, click from then on with the Yankees. I think my ERA was about 1.6, 1.7, you know, rest of the season.
Nice.
And then I had some good outings like you just mentioned in that doubleheader. If I recall correctly, Ralph Houck had actually criticized the bullpen publicly, which he never does, that type of thing. And so, but we went from a very poor bullpen to one of the best in the major leagues.
Yeah, so, now, in that bullpen with you, Lindy, if I remember correctly, was Steve Hamilton, the southpaw, the tall guy. Steve right. Hamilton and Jack Aker and I think Dooley Womack as well.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the first bullpen. And in 1970, we had 75 wins and saves in the bullpen.
Not too shabby.
And we had 91 one-run games that year. We didn't have an overpowering team, but if we had a lead by the fifth inning, it's almost a lock on the game. So that's how good our bullpen was that year. It was very good.
Yeah, tribute to the bullpen, exactly. And the major certainly wasn't frightened to go in there and put one of you guys in there. Now, they called that era in Yankee history, it was referred to, I think, by Fritz Peterson at first, as the Horace Clark era. Because Horace was a mainstay on many of those Yankee ball clubs. Now, do you count Bobby Cox as one of the Hall of Famers that you played with?
Well, of course, I didn't know him as a Hall of Famer.
Exactly, right.
Utility third baseman and, you know, a real nice guy. And in fact, years later, I went into preaching, and I preached in Selma, California. That's where he was from.
Okay.
Selma, California. So I kept up with his career, with his especially his coaching, you know, with Atlanta and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And did you see any signs back then, Lindy, that he would turn out to be the great manager that he did?
No, he didn't promote himself and
uh-huh.
things like that.
Okay.
I mean, he wasn't real outgoing like you might expect that someone would be, but he had a real level head on him, on his shoulders, and he really knew baseball. And I think as an infielder, they really studied the game. Usually infielders studied the game more than anybody else.
Okay. Yeah, and that would put Bobby a little bit in the forefront there. Now, you were a teammate in his final year with Mickey Mantle. What kind of a teammate was he?
Well, because Mickey is Mickey, and right. Of course he had such a great career. And we're both from Oklahoma. You know, I tell people a lot of the Yankees, you know, came from the South, you know. And of course, I'm talking about Mickey Mantle and myself and a lot of people. But I only played with him just a half a season, 1968,
right.
And that's when he retired. And of course, he wasn't the old Mickey Mantle of before, you know.
No, he was a shadow, yeah.
Right.
Yes, he was during that period in 68. Now, you threw to Jake Gibbs most of the time back then with the Yankees, Lindy?
Yes, Jake Gibbs was one of the best thinking catchers I've ever had in my career because we seemed to be on the same page, you know, just all the time and would be able to think together.
Yeah, he former quarterback at Ole Miss, I believe.
Right, that's true.
Yeah. Very interesting little tidbit there about Jake Gibbs. How does Houck fit in as far as the best manager you ever played for?
Well, what I tell people is that when I came to the Yankees, I saved his job and he saved my career. So he was the best thing that ever happened to my career.
The major,
because,
yeah.
He knew how to use me, and a lot of managers do not know how to use their bullpen. So he was really great for my career. Yeah,
he did a good job with you, Lindy. Yeah, he certainly did. Who do you consider among all the players that you played with? And there's certainly some illustrious names and big names and great ball players in there. Who were some of your greatest teammates?
Well, Steve Hamilton was a great teammate of mine. We did everything together, you know, and of course he was a representative for our ball club, and so we had a lot of similar habits. He liked guns, I liked guns, you know. He would take me to Connecticut, and we'd do a lot of shooting during off days,
mm-hmm.
And we like the same kind of food, this type of thing. So we did a lot of things together. Yeah.
Steve Hamilton, yeah. People may not remember. Steve had a pitch that he called the Folly Floater, which was
exactly.
Sort of a Rip Sewell Ephus pitch. Now, describe that a little bit for the people, Lindy, who may not be familiar.
Well, this was the latter part of one of the seasons. We weren't doing very good, and we knew we weren't going to win the pennant, and so he wanted to liven things up a little bit. So he invented this pitch, and he called it the Folly Floater.
Yeah.
And he introduced it in Cleveland. And so he'd have to have the right kind of hitter at the plate. He would throw it when the other team was ahead. You'd have to understand why he would have to do those particular things. For one thing, he hesitated. He threw it about 30 feet up in the air, and he could throw strikes with it. And so you couldn't have men on base, or they'd just run to the next base, right?
Right.
So it had to be the bases empty. But he would try to get a hitter that is like a power hitter, and it may be nervous and at home plate and everything. And so he would pick those kinds of hitters to throw this pitch to, and it was really some strange things happened when he did that. Yeah,
I remember, Lindy, he threw it to Tony Horton, I believe, at Yankee Stadium. Tony Horton of the Cleveland Indians. And
yes, he did.
Tony swung and popped it up, right?
Okay, well, what I remember, when he threw it in Cleveland, he threw it to a Horton that played first base.
Right, Tony Horton.
And that was the first time he threw it. And he's a really big guy at home plate. And so he never had to tell the catcher, you know, it was coming because he figured he could handle it, you know. So he thought it was the right time to throw it. So he took his windup and he kind of hesitated and then threw that with his left hand. He threw it up in the air about 30 feet, you know.
Right.
And it surprised the hitter so much that he stepped out of the batter's box and called timeout. And the umpire said, strike one, you know. And so that aggravated him quite a bit. So he reached down with both hands and got dirt on his hands and then picked up his bat. And he got back into home at the batter's box and he dug in. And then he waved to Steve, you know, throw it again. And so Steve obliged him, and so Steve again threw that hesitation pitch, and you could just see him grinding sawdust at home plate, just waiting for that ball to get there. You know, he's just going to hit it 9 miles, right?
Yeah.
And so he swung as hard as he could possibly swing at the ball, and somehow he did hit it, I think, toward his hand. It made a little weak pop up to the catcher, and he spun around and fell down on the ground. And here was the umpire calling him out. And he got up, he took his bat, and he broke it across home plate.
Yeah.
And then he crawled on his hands and knees all the way to the dugout.
Yeah, I remember that one, Lindy. Yeah. What a sight that was, Steve Hamilton.
Were you there at the game?
No, I wasn't there, but I remember reading about it in the newspaper.
Oh,
yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
Wow. That was something.
Yeah. One of the great scenes in baseball back in that day. Who were some of the toughest hitters that you faced, Lindy?
Well, I would say the best clutch hitter I ever faced was Frank Robinson.
Yeah,
the Baltimore, because he was such a great clutch hitter. And of all things, even Jerry Lynch, who was a pinch hitter, you know, left-handed pinch hitter, had a great career. But one time he hit a home run off me in Chicago. Jerry Lynch, and then the next day they had all the home runs he's hit, you know, against different pitchers, and my name was on there three times. I couldn't believe that, but he hit a fart ball, he hit a curve ball, he hit a fastball. What he would do was go look for your best pitch that you had, and that's what he would look for.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was just a real good clutch hitter.
Jerry Lynch, okay. Well, Lindy, it's been an honor to have you on the show, a real pleasure speaking with you about baseball back in the day. I thank you for spending part of your Sunday night with us.
Well, thank you very much, Bill, and I appreciate talking to you.
You have a great evening, my friend, a hero of my youth, Lindy McDaniel, folks.
Okay, thank you. You know what?
Yeah, sure.
Most people haven't been born when I retired. You know that, don't you?
Oh, yeah, I know.
Most people I meet have not been born when I retired, so.
Yeah. Well, I relish the chance to get with guys from your era and talk about the old days.
Right, okay.
Take care, Lindy. Lindy McDaniel,
right,
folks. Next thank up, you. We'll talk to former Nick and Heisman Trophy winner Charlie Ward. So stay with us, folks.
You are listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gustbuster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit Gustbuster.com and get your Gustbuster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
All right. Hey, folks, we're back with Sports Talk 1240 on GBB Freeport, New York. Bill Donahue with you tonight. Hope you're enjoying Sports Talk 1240, my first show in 2018. We got the NFL playoffs underway, Olympic qualifying events taking place for the games in South Korea in February. Ready for the Hall of Fame vote for Canton at the NFL that takes place at the Super Bowl. And, of course, the Major League Baseball Writers Association voting for Cooperstown will take place at the end of January. And, of course, we're looking forward to that. Well, my next guest was a Heisman Trophy winner in 1993 from Florida State. Undrafted by the NFL. He chose the NBA and was a fan favorite playing point guard here for the Knickerbockers. He's got a new book out written with John Finkel called The Athlete, Greatness, Grace, and the Unprecedented Life of Charlie Ward. I welcome to Sports Talk 1240 tonight, Charlie Ward. Charlie, good evening.
Good evening, Bill. How are you doing?
Great. I'm wonderful, Charlie, and it certainly is a pleasure to have you with us. Now, growing up, Charlie, what teams did you root for, and who were some of your favorite players?
I rooted for the 76ers in basketball.
Oh, wow. Okay. Why is that?
I guess because they were always on television, and
yeah,
they were always in the championship for the most part. You know, I had favorite years. That's when Moses Malone was playing and Andrew Toney.
Oh, yeah.
And Bobby Jones.
Right.
Guys like that. Maurice Cheeks. So, you know, I enjoyed watching them.
Yeah, they had some great ball clubs back in that day, definitely. You were involved in so many sports, Charlie, during your career. What sports did you participate in growing up?
Well, I was an athlete, so I played all the sports that had a ball connected to it.
Right, okay.
So I really didn't have – I played everything.
Now, you won the 93 Heisman Trophy. You won the Maxwell Award, the Dave O'Brien Award as quarterback back at Florida State. You led the Seminoles to their first ever national championship, defeating Nebraska in the Orange Bowl. What do you remember about that Orange Bowl ball game, Charlie?
A few things. Physically, it was very demanding.
Yeah.
So it was a nip and tuck game. But I do remember, you know, being able to drive, help us drive down the field, and, you know, to get the game-winning field goal. That was one memory. And the second one is, you know, the re-kick, having to – you missed the first one and then having to do it again. And we were grateful that he shanked it to the left as well off of that one. So, mm-hmm. You know, that was a couple of memories. And, you know, being able to be on the first national championship team at Florida State, which had some very good – teams before us.
Sure.
But they weren't fortunate to be able to cap off their season with the opportunity to win a championship, national championship. So I was grateful for that. I was able to be a part of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, one thing I read in doing some of my homework for our talk tonight, Charlie, is your interesting relationship with Warwick Dunn, who came on to play with the Seminoles while you were already established with the club. Talk to us and explain a little bit about your relationship with Warrick Dunn, who is a great ball player.
Well, Warrick and I came roommates after I spoke with one of my heroes, which was Doug Edwards.
Okay.
Doug Williams. And Doug is from Louisiana, and he knew Warrick's mom, and so he asked me to take care of him when he came. And so Warrick, I showed him around on his visit, and also became roommates with him his freshman year. So we developed a bond. You know, he lost his mom in a shooting accident. So it was tough on him, but he needed someone that would be willing to listen to him, and we didn't talk. I didn't talk much. He didn't talk much, but we were able to, you know, listen to each other and help, you know, help each other develop and grow over the course of that year.
And he became a great ball player at Florida State.
Yes, he was. He actually played quite a bit his freshman year after a young man, Tyler McMillan, got injured. And so he got an opportunity, and he took advantage of it. So, and then he turned out to be a very good football player.
Yeah, good pro with Tampa Bay and I believe the Atlanta Falcons, if I'm not mistaken, as well. Great career from Warrick Dunn. Now, people may not realize, Charlie, that you hold the third largest margin of victory in the Heisman Trophy balloting, second only to O.J. Simpson's win in 68 and Troy Smith in 2006, which must be a great honor for you. Did you realize that you were the third largest margin of victory in the Heisman?
I heard about it, and I mean, it's, you know, just to have an experience, whether you're the third largest vote winner or not, just the experience of being recognized as one of the best players in the country.
Yeah, and, that speaks also, for itself. You're right.
You know, it's something that, you know, is memorable for me.
Right. Now, you had a great coach in Florida State and Bobby Bowden. What were your impressions of Bobby playing for him down in Tallahassee?
Well, he's a Christian man, and, you know, the values that he gave to us as players were very invaluable over the course of our time there. He treated us like his kids and gave us opportunities to develop and grow as young men, and he was a great mentor as well, by the way he lived his life. He's a Christian, as I mentioned, he's a Christian coach, and he surrounded himself with those type of coaches. And so it just permeated throughout the locker room, the meeting room, and on the field, you know, the mentality that he brought to the table through his coaches. He allowed his coaches to coach. And, you know, I was fortunate to be able to be coached by Coach Mark Rick, who's a godly man, and he lived his life that way. And so, you know, we were blessed to have him. I have him for three of my 5 years, five of my 5 years there. So, you know, that's just a great role model, and all stems around, you know, the leadership of Coach Bowden and bringing in those type of men.
Great man, Bobby Bowden, definitely, Charlie. Now, have you met the new FSU coach, Willie Taggart?
Yes, I have.
Well, what are your impressions of Willie as a coach?
I mean, he has very, you know, similar values as Coach Bowden. You know, he's all about the student athlete and making sure that they achieve their goals and having a great experience while they're at Florida State. And, you know, that's his main objective. I mean, he wants to win football games, but he also wants to make sure that the players are having a good experience, and also not just coming in to go to the next level, but to leave, you know, with wisdom, knowledge on how to be a man. And so that's something he's working to establish as well.
Excellent. Any aspirations of Charlie Ward to coach college football?
I mean, at this point in time, not really.
No, okay.
I'm coaching high school football.
Right.
And so there may come a time and point that I may try it, but at this time,
I'm not happy. Yeah. Now, I found it interesting, Charlie, you didn't play baseball at FSU, but still you were drafted by the Brewers and the Yankees. How do you think that came about?
Mainly because I played two sports in college.
Yeah.
And they wanted to have my draft rights, and they figured I played like 1 year of high school baseball, and they wanted to have my rights just in case I decided to play baseball, which, you know, as I mentioned, I was capable of doing.
Mm-hmm.
If I would have, you know, if I would have chose that route. But that was, was really the main reason behind getting drafted. They saw me as an athlete, and they figured that if I can play two sports and at a high level, then
yeah. Well,
I'm not three. So.
Sure, yeah. You're also an avid tennis player, Charlie.
Like I said, I could play
tennis
as well. I mean, it's, like I said, I was an athlete, hand-eye coordination, those types of things I was capable of doing. So it was just a matter of, you know, playing and enjoying it. I didn't play competitive
tennis.
But I can hit the ball back across the net.
Okay, now, you were drafted by the Knicks, you come to New York, you played sparingly under Pat Riley, but then Jeff Van Gundy comes in, takes the head coaching job, and he gives you more playing time.
Yes, well, Coach Van Gundy and I had some deep roots. He was the guy that helped me with my skill development as a basketball player my rookie year. And so I came in an hour before practice every day to work on my skill development. And so he was the guy that took me under his wing, and we built a bond. He knew what kind of work I put in and the effort I gave. And so he knew what I brought to the table. So, you know, that's what I share with a lot of people is you never know the relationships that you have and you build through the work part. So, you know, I'm sure if I would have skipped out on a few workouts and been lazy and just taken my rookie year for granted and not gotten any better or willing to get better, then my time in the NBA would probably be short.
Right.
But, you know, I was fortunate to be able to have a good rapport with him, and also he understood my work ethic and what I brought to the table. So, so that was how I was able to maintain, you know, my lead, you know, my time in the NBA.
Right. Backup for Derek Harper starting out. As we said in the opening, Charlie becomes a fan favorite here in New York, known for that hard work ethic, unselfish play, established himself as a great three-point shooter, and really a reliable ball distributor and a respected floor leader. Charlie Ward with us tonight on Sports Talk 1240. I always remember the days, Charlie, the Giants and the Jets having trouble at quarterback, and the best quarterback in New York, people say, was Charlie Ward.
Yes, I heard that quite a bit.
Yeah. And probably true back in those days when you look at the problems the Jets and the Giants had. Now, looking back in one of the playoff series, I remember, Charlie, against the Miami Heat, you tried to box out P.J. Brown. Remember that ball game?
Yes.
Oh, a whole brouhaha broke out. Van Gundy had a hold of Alonzo. How did all that develop? Talk to us a little bit about that particular play.
I mean, it was just unfortunate. You know, we had had a tough battle up until that point.
Right.
And I was just boxing out like I normally do. I got low. So that I could, because in most cases when you're boxing big guys out, you have to get into their legs so they couldn't jump.
Right.
Nothing dirty or anything, but he felt like, it was dirty play. And it was, competitive spirit as well. So, unfortunately, we got into a tussle. But, the good thing about it is, we both Christian young men, and we recognize what the situation was. And even today, we'll talk and support it. He supports me. Mm-hmm. So it was what it was at the time.
Yeah, definitely. It's great to know that you guys are back on the same page. But, boy, a lot of suspensions from that particular play. Patrick, Starks, LJ, Allen Houston, all suspended by the NBA. Of course, Miami wins that series. The Knicks failed to advance to the Eastern Conference Finals, but then Miami goes on to lose to the Bulls in five games, so they got back what was coming to them. Now, how did you feel about leaving the Knicks, Charlie?
I've been blessed to be able to be there for 9.5 years as a role player,
yeah,
which is unheard of. And so, when you get older and you're at the end of your contract, you are normally a guy who may be thrown into a deal, which I was. I thrown into a deal to go to Phoenix. And Phoenix, bought me out or didn't want me to raise me. And so I got an opportunity to go to San Antonio for the rest of the year. And so, that was part of it. I mean, we hated leaving New York, but understood the situation and, it's business and those types of things. But as I mentioned, we were fortunate to be able to stay in one place for 9.5 seasons, which is very rare.
It's rare, right. And it was great to have you here. Now, what led to your retirement? You had some injuries?
Yes, I've hurt my knee, the knee that I had issues with since high school. But I ended up having a bone bruise that I never could get well. And plus I've gotten older, so I couldn't get back the next year, and so I ended up retiring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very tough for a guy like you. Speaking with Charlie Ward tonight on Sports Talk 1240. Charlie's got a new book out with John Finkel writing it with him called The Athlete, Greatness, Grace, and the Unprecedented Life of Charlie Ward. How did you enjoy entering into the foray of publishing and writing this book, Charlie?
Well, I've been trying to write a book, a biography, for quite some time. And I was grateful that John and the National Football Foundation and the Hall of Fame started a series, a few of the inductees. And Angel Green was the first inductee that John wrote a biography on, and then he chose to tell my story, which I thought he did a great job of telling the story from my days of growing up to to college and then pros, and then kind of what I'm doing today. And so it's a great read. You know, I enjoyed reading it myself. A lot of stories he told. Some of it I did not know. I kind of understood, but I didn't know much of it. And it was, you know, kind of great to see how God's hand was, how he orchestrated everything that happened, whether it was the failures or the success, how he orchestrated it all to be glorified, and also, you know, just to see how perseverance,
right,
persevering through good and bad times can help you, you know, develop and carve out a niche in a career. So, and just be a role model as well. So I was grateful that John, you know, chose my story to write about. And we've had some great success, a lot of great reviews, and hopefully we can continue to do that.
Certainly. The book is available on Amazon, The Athlete, Greatness, Grace, and the Unprecedented Life of Charlie Ward. What's one of your favorite stories from that book, Charlie?
Well, I mean, there are quite a few stories in there. But I guess one of them would be just how, you know, the relationship that I had with my dad, which was, you know, he's a coach, and, you know, I was an athlete, and a lot of times, you know, my dad was at work and practice and those types of things, and, you know, I just wanted to be around him, and so a couple times, you know, there were things that I didn't do at home that, you know, that allowed me to go and hang out with him, and I would, you know, cry like a baby. This was when I was maybe 6th or 7th grade, and I was either on punishment or doing or whatever the case may be, and I wasn't able to go to the game, and, you know, that was, like, devastating to me. Like it's the end of the world, but I did realize that if I do what I was supposed to do, that I did get an opportunity to go and hang out. But, you know, just the way, you know, our relationship growing up, my dad was crucial in my development as a person, as a man, and as an athlete.
Great, great story. Yeah, definitely. Now, taking a look back at your illustrious career, Charlie, as we said previously, 9.5 real good seasons as a Knickerbocker here in New York. Who do you consider one of your best teammates?
Well, I developed a special bond and friendship with Allen Houston over the course of, you know, my tenure here. I know he came in maybe in my second or third year here. I mean, in New York, and we developed a bond. He's kind of a Christian brother, and we did Bible study together, and families became good friends, and so, you know, he was one of the guys that, you know, we hung out a lot, and so he would be one guy, but there are there's quite a few veterans that I hung out with early on to learn the ropes of being a professional. Derek Harper was one who took me in on his wing and taught me, you know, how to play the game, the tricks, the trades, toughness, mental toughness. You know, he was able to have me around his family so I could see, you know, healthy husband-wife relationship with kids and those types of things. And Herb Williams was another one.
And Herb, sure.
Herb taught me a lot about the game and how to be a professional as well. So, you know, I enjoyed hanging out with those guys. And they, you know, they were veterans. They had been in the league 15, 16 years at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And so I enjoyed just hanging out with them, and I didn't do much in the way of going out, and they didn't either, as far as, you know, going to clubs and those types of things. You know, we would go to the restaurant and what have you, but that was about it. And so, they, you know, they just took me under their wing, and I was grateful for it.
What's Charlie Ward involved with these days?
I currently coach high school football. I have a football coach at Booker T. Washington in Pensacola. And so that's what I'm doing, and being a husband and a father as well. And now, you know, with the book, we're doing that. And, you know, most book proceeds will go to charity.
Oh, good. Very good.
Charity,
sure.
Charity Wheel. You know, we support it over the course of time. And some hurricane relief work back in Houston where we were for about 10 years. So we're looking forward to doing, hopefully the book does well, and speaking engagements and those types of things to be able to help support other people.
Sure. We do hope that book does well. As Charlie said, and I certainly agree, it is a good read. Some great stories in there. Charlie writes it with John Finkel. The book, again, is called The Athlete, Greatness, Grace, and the Unprecedented Life of Charlie Ward. Well, it's been a pleasure having you with us tonight, Charlie. I thank you for taking time out of your Sunday night to spend it with us.
Well, I appreciate it, Bill. And also, I'll be in New York at the Garden on Wednesday.
Ah, okay.
At halftime of the Knicks, I think they're in Chicago game.
Okay. Note that, folks. Anybody going into the Garden on Wednesday, stop by and see Charlie at halftime signing his new book. Say hi. I'm sure he'd appreciate it. And thanks again, Charlie, and we'll talk to you down the road.
All right, thanks, Bill.
Have a good night. Charlie Ward, folks. That'll do it for me tonight on Sports Talk 1240. I'd like to thank my guests, Lindy McDaniel and Charlie Ward. Stay tuned for hour number two on Sports Talk 1240. Paul Spiteri will be with you. I'll see you on the 21st, and don't forget our annual Blockbuster Super Bowl Sunday show on February 4th. So until then, Bill Donahue, wishing you a good evening, folks.
Expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.